Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. I'm Adrian Eames. James is here as well. I'm back. James kept the house in shape, nice and tidy over the last couple of weeks. Are you good, James?
I'm good, Adrian. It's good to have you back. I wouldn't say I kept it tidy. I'd say I kept it going.
No house parties. Are there any house parties?
Not allowed anymore, Adrian. They're gone since last March, remember.
Okay. Yeah. True enough. And you've been enjoying the football over the last wee while? I guess.
Yeah, it's been very, very good. But the cup, I love an L Cup run, as you know. And the cup on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday was good to get a couple of results in there. See some of them games. It was really, really good.
Yeah. And your local team, the team that you adore, Moctas, gave Dundalk a bit of a fight for certainly 45, 50 minutes of the game before Dundalk turned on the style in the second half.
Yeah, seven minutes in the second half, basically put pay to them. 3 goals in 7 minutes, and that was the end of it. But first half, some very, very, very good chances. McCaffrey again scoring. I just said it there, Stephen. I think that's his 7th goal in 6 games or something like that. If he hasn't been picked up by a League of Ireland club soon, I'd be shocked. But a couple of good chances as well. Mick Daly had a chance, just went over the bar. So they put it up to them, but unfortunately, I think the professionalism of Dundalk just blasted them away in the second half. And it was a good run, it was just a difficult tie for them, and let's be honest, they were never going to come out on top of it.
Okay, we'll come on to the Cup in due course, but of course it's a big week in the reign of Stephen Kenny as Ireland manager. We're going to look ahead to Wednesday's mammoth task against Portugal in the Algarve. Stephen Elliott is with us and we'll get the view from Portugal. We'll also, as I mentioned, look back at the Cup action over the weekend with Pat Fennin and get his thoughts as well on the Ireland games, because he'll be on commentary duty for RTE over the next couple of weeks. And we'll also chat to the first female CEO of a league club in this country. That's Galway's Ruth Fahey. But let's start, shall we, with the international stuff. 3 games in less than a week for Ireland. Portugal on Wednesday in Faro, and then 2 home matches, Azerbaijan on Saturday, and then Serbia on Tuesday of next week. But first up, Portugal on Wednesday, as I mentioned, joined by Stephen Elliott, former Irish international, and by Tom Kunder of Portugal.net, and also a regular contributor to World Soccer Magazine and various other publications. Tom, we're going to talk obviously about Wednesday in a moment, but I guess you can't talk about Wednesday, you can't talk about Portuguese football without talking about Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo. And he's been in the news since before the weekend with that astonishing move that I think caught so many people by surprise, moving to Manchester United. Did that move catch you by surprise?
Yes, certainly did. And everyone here in Portugal as well weren't really talking about anything else. You know, for instance, the front cover of A Bola, the main football newspaper here, on Saturday morning was just a massive picture of Ronaldo, kind of lightning coming all out of him in a Manchester United kit with the headline, Back to the Future. So, yeah, it's really caught people's imagination here.
Yeah. Stephen, what have you made of events over the last few days? Ronaldo going back to Manchester United 12 years after the glory days under Alex Ferguson. It was quite a move, because we were all expecting this move to Manchester City to go through.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shock. But I think you have to give credit to Cristiano Ronaldo, like, actually going back and playing in the Premier League, because I think it's the most high paced league in Europe. Like, you got to be bang at it every week. I watch a lot of it, and the fact that Ronaldo's coming right into his twilight years. Obviously, you look at him, he's an absolute machine. He looks at himself really well. But the fact that he's come over and he's going to challenge himself again in this league, I think huge credit should be given to the man. And it shouldn't really surprise us either. We all know of his abilities and his mindset. But what I will do, I think, from a Man United's point of view, I think it's going to raise the standard, raise the mentality. And I think him coming into that squad could cause them, could make them a real threat to the title this season.
Yeah. Do you see it that way, Tom, that, you know, the quality he brings will be enough to push Manchester United on? Because obviously they've been just lagging a bit behind, obviously, their City rivals, Manchester, Liverpool, of course, as well in recent seasons. But what kind of impact do you think he can make at 36 years of age for United?
Yeah, I agree completely with what Steve just said there. I mean, United have got a really high-quality squad at the moment, haven't they? Especially their forward players, lots of options. And I think that what Ronaldo will bring is just, that winning mentality and that kind of, you know, obsessive drive to get the very best out of himself and his team, and to do everything possible to win trophies and win football games. So, yeah, it's definitely going to give them a lift. Of course, even just they've got quite a few younger players there, haven't they? And imagine what it's like. You know, suddenly you've got a teammate who's been one of the best players in the world for the last, you know, last decade, decade and a half, and you're going to be playing with him, training with him every week. So that's really going to, I think, give a whole lift to the club.
Mm. And why to United, do you think, Tom, at this point in his career?
Well, good question, isn't it? I think the ins and outs of the transfer, we'll only kind of find that out probably in the next few weeks. But I think he himself, Ronaldo, he wanted a new challenge, you know. I think, and there's no doubt about it, you know, the English Premier League is the most high-profile league in the world. And Ronaldo always likes to be at the centre of things. And he always likes to push himself, you know, even at his age. It's quite amazing, isn't it? I mean, he's 36, not too long, going on 37. And yet, you know, last year, he's top scorer in Italy. You know, he's joint top scorer at the Euros. And I suppose he's looking at it. Maybe he's got another 2 years at the very top of the game at the most. And I suppose he wants to make the most of that. And, of course, I think he wants another shot at trying to win a Champions League. And I think he's probably got a better chance of that at Manchester United than at Juventus.
Yeah, what do you think, James? They say you should never go back, but he's obviously going back. And he is, as Roy Keane mentioned, he's a winner. He's single-minded. He's focused. He's a fitness fanatic. He's not going back just for, you know, nostalgic reasons, going back to, you know, an old pad in Manchester. He's going back and he means business. He's all about winning trophies.
Yeah, I think nostalgia went out of football many, many years ago, to tell you the truth, Adrian. But I think if you him and Cavani are just going to be, I think it's going to be excellent to watch the two of them playing alongside each other. Very good in the air, both of them. Who's going to, like, the balls into them is going to be very critical. But I still think he could easily hit 20 plus goals a season in the Premier League. His fitness is unbelievable. The age of him, that would have mattered in the past to Man United, if you remember. They would have, at 36, I think they wouldn't have given out more than a 1 year contract, if that. But he's just such a specimen of a man. He's kept himself in such good shape that I think he could really easily adapt. I know what Stephen's saying about the pace of it compared to Italian and Spanish football, but I think he's well capable of doing it, and he might drag some of the players that haven't been up to top notch at United up to his level.
Well, potentially he could make his debut against Newcastle on Saturday week. In the meantime, he's involved with the national team with Portugal. I guess here in Ireland, Tom, we're kind of hoping maybe Cristiano's going to be distracted by his move to Manchester. I think the medical went through today, so all well on that front, but he's got to sort out the accommodation. His mind might be elsewhere. You know, he mightn't feel like playing on Wednesday. Am I clutching at straws?
I'm afraid you are, I think, there, because there's one thing that Cristiano Ronaldo, I think one of the secrets of his success is his mentality. You know, we're talking about here about that he kind of caused controversy right throughout his career. Well, a lot of this controversy, to be honest, not really of his own making. And it just doesn't affect his performances on the pitch at all. You know, he's always ready to go, he's always top notch, even if, you know, there's some talk or some kind of polemic surrounding him. It just doesn't affect the way he performs on the pitch. And you know, even if he has a poor game, the next game he'll come back, he can score that trick. So, yeah, I wouldn't expect him to be affected one iota by all this, what's going on in his club football.
And how is he viewed in Portugal? Is he widely loved?
Oh, yeah,
by football
fans? National hero. An absolute national hero. You know, we're talking about this is a football-crazy country. And he's the greatest footballer of all time. You know, he's just really the pride of Portugal. Even in terms of kind of raising the profile of the whole country itself. You go anywhere in the world, you know, you say you're Portuguese, you live in Portugal, what's the first thing people think about? Probably Cristiano Ronaldo. And so, you know, everything he's achieved, you know, incredible achievements, really, anywhere he's gone. And you know, possibly this game against Ireland again will be put down as a marker, because of course his joint top for becoming the record goal scorer in international football of all time. So I don't think that will take very long. I certainly expect him to break that record in these next three matches. You know, hopefully from Portsmouth's point of view on Wednesday.
Yeah, well, he's looking for, as you say, his 110th international goal, currently level with the Iranian great Ali Dai, so it could be bye-bye Dai very shortly. You'd expect Ronaldo to break the record. Stephen, what are your thoughts on Ireland? As we mentioned at the outset, three games in less than a week, but starting with the game on Wednesday, how do Ireland approach what is a very, very difficult task given where we're at?
I think Stephen Kenny's got to be looking at the last couple of results and taking the positives out of two of them. You know what? We're off to a really poor start under Stephen, struggled to get results, but I know the victory against Andorra was only Andorra, and we didn't play very well, but to score four goals, I think that's a confidence booster in itself. Obviously, Troy Parrott getting a couple, kind of went into the Hungary game, where I thought we did okay. Like, it was probably, the Hungary game was the one where I thought there's something starting to kind of develop there. You can see a kind of pattern a little bit, but I think Stephen's just got to be organised there. And as I said, we've got players, I think, that can score goals if we can kind of get the ball in and around the box. But again, doing that, talking about that and doing that is two different things. But I will say, I've watched Troy Parrott a couple of times, full games this year for MK Dons, and he looks really much stronger now physically. And he I know it's only League One here, but he's somebody that I'll be interested to watch playing now for Ireland over these next couple of games, because I do think he's been probably MK's best player, and he's somebody that we kind of have to look at and kind of build a team around going forward.
Yeah, James, the expectation levels are pretty low around the international team, and that's perhaps understandable given all that's going on. We, you know, obviously we had the Olympics, we got the Paralympics at the moment, we had the Euros, and obviously Ireland's poor form prior to the summer doesn't exactly engender a great degree of confidence around the international team. We could do with a couple of positive results over the course of the next week, and okay, leaving aside Wednesday in Portugal, that may well be a bridge too far. You'd be hoping for a typically trademark spirited Irish performance, but it's hard to see anything but a Portugal win at this point. But what are you hoping for over the course of the next week, given the games against Azerbaijan that follows Portugal and Serbia next week?
Over these next three, I've been looking for two good results for Ireland against Azerbaijan and Serbia. But, you know, we've gone to Portugal as underdogs before. We've drawn with them twice. So that you can take positives from that, but I think for Stephen Kenny, I think it's unfortunate the Portuguese game is first, because no matter what happens there, if they lose, there's a lot more pressure going to be heaped upon him ahead of the Azerbaijan game. But I think if we get out of this, if we get 6 points out of these three games, that's going to be a good score, and kind of puts us back into the reckoning for a place or a playoff place.
Yeah, that would be a terrific return, wouldn't it, Stephen? You know, beating Azerbaijan, and obviously Serbia
think,
would be a tough
yeah,
one.
I'm obviously, like, you think about the two home games, like you say, the Portugal away, I'd be very surprised if we get anything out of that game, if I'm totally honest. But the two home games, you'd like to think you're winnable. I think it's one of them you have to take each game as it comes. I know it's an old cliche and that, but I don't think we're in a position to start kind of planning for the next game, or we need to get results. And I think the Azerbaijan game has got to be a game that Stephen Kenny's looking at and thinking, right, that's got to be a game we win. That's a must win for me, because again, a home game against Azerbaijan team, I don't know too much about them. I was looking at the results, they're a little bit here and there, win a couple of games, but they're not going to be a powerhouse of Europe, let's be honest. So you're looking at that game and thinking, we need to win that game, and leads us into the Serbia game, who we've kind of struggled against recently. But I would even say 4 points. Listen, I think it's going to be a big ask to qualify in this kind of qualification for the World Cup. I think it'll be a huge ask. So I think even if we can kind of get 4 points out of the next kind of three games, I think that's a progression. And I just think you gotta look to not get beaten in the game, and maybe look for little bits and pieces that we can work on going forward. Because I just think we're too far behind already to start worrying about qualifying. And I just think we 4 points for me, I think I'd probably be happy enough with that.
Yeah, obviously, I presume in Portugal the expectation is a Portugal win. But what's your view of Ireland? Have you watched much, or how aware are you of Stephen Kenny and his team?
Yeah, well, they're obviously not the team that they were a few years ago. I agree there with, I think it was Steve that was talking about past results. And I remember in 2002, that World Cup qualifying campaign, which I think is possibly Portugal's most successful campaign ever. But at World Cup, they played 10 matches, won 7, drew 3. And that was the side with Luis Figo and Lee Foster. But the two of their draws in that game were precisely against Ireland. And they do tend to struggle a little bit against, say, more typical British side, strong physical side, hard working. And also, there's quite a lot of pressure on Portugal. People had very high expectations going into the Euros. Of course, they were champions, and everyone here in Portugal were unanimous that this squad is far stronger than the squad which actually won the Euros in 2016. And it was a big disappointment. And lots of questions are being asked of the coach, Fernando Santos, because he's got this fantastic talent, up front, as well as Ronaldo. He's got players like Bruno Fernandes, Bernardo Silva, the other shot at Liverpool, of course, Andre Silva in Germany, can't stop scoring. Yet, he hasn't really got these players to gel at all in the national team. So, there's quite a lot of pressure on Portugal. I suppose, how would they react? I suppose it can go one or two ways. They might be a little bit stunned about the criticism which came their way at the Euros. And if that's the case, I think that's bad news for Ireland, obviously. Or they may, be a bit nervy. And if Ireland can keep it tight for the first half, for example, without conceding, Portugal might the nerves might get to them, the fans might start getting a little bit edgy. And, could turn into a tight match. So, it's just a wait and see, I think.
Yeah. And you're not expecting any, new faces, a change of approach. You referenced some of them, apart from Ronaldo, you mentioned, Bruno Fernandes, Diogo Jota, Bernardo Silva, Diaz, Pereira. The list really goes on. But it's the tried and trusted that the manager will go with on Wednesday, is it?
I think so, although I think, in terms of personnel, I wouldn't expect too many changes. The big discussion here in Portugal is if he would change system. Because it's kind of fashionable now, isn't it, in football to play three at the back or five at the back, with two wing backs. The champions here in Portugal last season, Sporting, that's the system they used, and very successfully. Of course, Italy, they used that system, didn't they, in the Euros and won it. And Portugal really seemed to have the players who ideally fit that system. You've got João Cancelo. And then you've got Rafael Guerreiro, the right back and the left back, who are really perfect wing backs, you would have thought. And there's been quite a lot of calls for Fernando Santos, the coach, to try the system. So far, he hasn't. He's quite a conservative coach, which is really one of the main criticisms which has been leveled at him. He's just kind of 4-4-2 man. Doesn't really, he's a little bit stuck in his way. And so it'd be interesting to see if Portugal do try something different from a tactical point of view and, what effect that will have.
Okay, and of course, Portugal without João Félix and Renato Sanches. But I guess the consensus, lads, is we're anticipating a Portugal win. Is that your feeling, Stephen?
Yeah, as I said, anything other than a defeat against Portugal will be a bonus for me. You just mentioned some of the players that Portugal have at their disposal, and again, no disrespect to the players we have to pick from, that Stephen has to pick from. We're not quite at that caliber at the moment, and that's just the reality of it. But we need to make sure we still have players that in the squad that have got top international experience, and I think Shane Duffy as well coming back playing for Brighton, sure, playing in a system that kind of similar to how Stephen want to play, that kind of same philosophy. I think he's playing really well for Brighton at the moment, and that's a big bonus, because I think when Duffy plays for Ireland, we look a lot more kind of secure at the back, a lot more of a presence and a physical presence and experience that is huge in international football. I think when you have so many young lads in the squad, you need to look around the squad and see faces that have been involved in big games before for Ireland, and hopefully, because you have that security there as a young person, you can go and express yourself a little bit more, and that's something that Stephen Kenny, I'm sure, will be aware of. And the fact that Duffy, for me, is a huge one, that he's back playing in the Premier League. He scored a goal there last week. He's a goal threat as well for us. We can't look away from that. I know we're looking at different ways to create chances, and obviously the likes of Adam Adar and Troy Parrott we mentioned, but we can't look past the likes of John Egan, Shane Duffy, Dara O'Shea scoring a few goals as well for West Brom. I think we gotta look at all of our ammunition that we can possibly kind of hoard Portugal with, and maybe get the balance right of playing this kind of flowing football while keeping us secure. But again, anything other than a defeat for me will be a big bonus over in Portugal on Wednesday. And again, you're just looking at being secure and solid, and hopefully kind of taking some of the positives hopefully out of the game into the next two bigger games for me.
Okay, well, listen, we leave it there. Many thanks to Stephen Elliott, former Irish international, also to Tom Kunder in Lisbon for joining us on the line. We're also joined by Pat Fennan. Pat, we're going to chat about the cup action over the weekend, but before we do, just get your thoughts on the upcoming matches for the Republic of Ireland. What are you hoping for?
Listen, I think we all know this is the one that's going to really test the squad. It's a difficult assignment away from home. Against Portugal, probably one of the best teams over the last 10 years in international football. So it's a huge game for us and a huge task. And I suppose with a lot of our players still not playing regular football, that's your concern early in the season, you know. But listen, we got to go there. I think Stephen mentioned the fact that we can't go there and defend for 90 minutes. That will be the case. We're going to have to defend for long periods of game. Our shape is going to have to be good, compact. Goalkeeper's going to have to play really well, I'd imagine. So, listen, if we get anything out of Portugal, I think it'd be a fantastic result. But unfortunately, I don't see that being the case. I just think they're too strong.
Yeah, how does he approach it? Because, you know, it's a fairly taxing run of matches. You know, Portugal on Wednesday, Azerbaijan at home on Saturday, and then Serbia on Tuesday. In terms of personnel, will he have to shake it up a little? Or?
Yeah, I think that's the problem. When you don't have lads playing, you know, on a regular basis, haven't started their season regularly, then it's a big ask to play that many games in short space of time. So he's going to have to mix it up in that regard. You know, we have some that are playing regularly and you know, the mainstay of the team you would think will play in all the games. But I think there will be changes in certain areas of the team, and balancing that is difficult. I think if you're targeting games, out of them three games, you're targeting the two home games. Obviously, our start to that campaign has been poor, you know. So 3 points at home to Azerbaijan is a must, you know. Like I said, if we get out in Portugal, it'll be a major bonus. And then obviously Serbia as well, so which is a very, very tough game. So, you know, I think the target will probably be the two home games where we're looking to pick up points, but away from home, it'll be difficult again, really difficult task against Portugal. And like you say, that can have an impact on the rest of the games, because you're going to have to work so hard in Portugal as well. It's going to be a difficult period for us.
So Pat, which way does he go about that Portugal game then, with two games behind it? Does he look at resting players? Some players probably won't play all three games.
Listen, as a manager, you're probably balancing that up in your head. You're saying, okay, if I go to Portugal and arrest a few, we could get absolutely hammered. You know, that's not going to be good for a group that's a little bit low in confidence at the moment. We're looking for results, you know, a little bit of stick flying around. So, or you go there and you think, I'll play my best team. If we put on a decent performance, I'll get a huge lift out of that. You know, so again, it's a balancing act, like I say. I would think Stephen will go as strong as he can in Portugal. I don't see him, you know, leaving players out that may play in Serbia or against Azerbaijan. I think he'll go. I think he's got to go there with a strong side, otherwise it could be a long, long night for us, you know. And I think that has implications for the next two games as well. Listen, it's very difficult. It is very difficult. The other way around probably would have been easier to have the Portugal the last one. But, you know, that's the way it's come out, and that's what we've got to deal with. And again, you don't know. We can pick up injuries before then. We can pick up injuries in the Portuguese game, and then, you know, that missed out in the other two games. So I think you just got to go as strong as you can. But I would see changes I don't see the same team obviously starting the three games, and I would see changes. But the target obviously has to be try to pick up points at home.
Okay, well, let's move on to the cup action over the course of the weekend. The holders, the extra.ie FAI Cup holders, Dundalk through to the quarterfinals, as we mentioned at the start of the show, a 5-1 win over James's team, St Mochta's. Pat Hooban hitting a hat-trick, including one from the penalty spot. St Pat's, they had to really dig in. It ended in penalties. a 4-1 win on penalties after a 1-1 draw after 90 minutes and extra time. It looked like Pats had won it in normal time when Chris Forrester scored a late penalty, but then Barry Coffey equalised for Cork in the 95th minute, but Pats going through on spot kicks. Waterford defeated Kilnamana 4-1, very good win, and their fine run continues. John Martin scoring twice for the Blues. UCD 2-1 winners over Longford Town at the Bowl. Finn Harps beat Derry City 1-0 at Finn Park. Tunde Owalabi scoring from the penalty spot. Here's the Harps assistant manager, Paul Hegarty.
To be fair, you know, there wasn't much in the game, and we came out on the right side of it tonight, and it was all about just staying in the cup.
And the key moment was the penalty, and Owalabi was an emphatic penalty.
Yeah, he finished it very, very well, like, to be fair. Like, but you've got to get in the box to get those, you know, penalties. And that, like, Ryan's got a cross in front of the defender and that, and he swung for the ball. Probably didn't mean to kick him. He's kicked him, and it's a penalty inside the box. And, you know, to be fair to Tundy, he stuck it away well and just stood after it. We probably could have been another one in front. And just before it, the keepers made an absolutely outstanding save from Adam Foley. So probably on that period in the game, we probably just about deserved to win the game.
It's a first ever win for Harps over Derry in the cup, so quite a significant result there tonight.
Yeah, of course it is. You can say it's about Derry and whatever, like, but last week against Pats, that was probably a more rewarding victory than the fact that, you know, Pats were sitting second in the league. We needed to get points on the board, and we got the points. That's not taken away from tonight, but we needed to stay in the cup tonight, and it was a different type of game. You know, it was cagey in the first half, and that, I think overall, you know, the second half I thought we were much better, maybe not as good as we would have thought we would be, but we were much better in the second half.
That's Paul Hegarty. Let's get the view from the Derry camp. Here's their manager, Rory Higgins.
I really, really disappointed. Thought we were quite laboured at times, and it wasn't. It didn't mirror last month, and that's the most disappointing thing, but I'm not going to stand here, and it didn't in the dressing room either. I'm not going to stand and tear strips off the players, because they've been exceptional and they've been a joy to work with, but we just need to use this defeat as ammunition and use that hurt in our bellies at the minute to drive us on for the remainder of the season.
Can you put your finger on why the performance didn't reach the standards that you set over recent weeks?
It was just it was flat, and we lacked a wee bit of composure on the ball, and I don't think I don't think Jared had a safety mic until 80th odd minute or something like that. So that was the most disappointing thing. I think we lacked a wee bit of individual responsibility in key areas, and again, it's not being critical of the players, it's just how the game went, and that was a slightly disappointing thing, and we didn't create enough, to be honest, Eric, and nowhere near what we've created in recent weeks.
The positive aspect to your season, Rory, is that you've so much still to play for over the remaining 10 or 11 games.
Loads to play for. Players are in good form. As I said, I'm not going to stand here and praise them to the hilt, and then we lose again, and then I'm not going to stand and tear strips off them. That's not how I operate. The players know where we went wrong, but they also know that we as a staff are really proud of their efforts in recent months, but that was slightly below par tonight, and we're disappointed with it.
That's Rory Higgins. Elsewhere, Maynooth University Town, very good win over First Division Cove Ramblers by 3-2. And Wexford were 2-0 winners at Kilester. Donny Carney, Tyler Dunphy and Carl Manahan with the goals, and Ryan Robinson off Kilester sent off in that game. And of course, arguably the tie of the round took place on Sunday afternoon, and a pretty eventful game, it has to be said, as Shamrock Rovers, Bowes matches tend to be, but it ended Bohemians 2, Shamrock Rovers 1. Terrific goal from Ali Coote to give Bowes the lead early in the second half, cancelled out by Roberto Lopez. And we had Georgie Kelly and Ronan Finn both seeing red before Andy Lyons, the Bowes right back, got forward and smashed in a terrific left-footed drive to earn Bowes a place in the quarterfinals. Bohemians 2-1 winners. Here's their manager, Keith Long.
You know, the character of the group, fantastic to get a winner. Andy Lyons, I don't think he'll hit a better shot off his left foot. Drove forward, drove at the space and just let go from the edge of the box, and I don't think it gave Alan Manis any chance. It's a good feeling, to be into the next round. I think we've obviously had, you know, a fortnight off. Rovers come into the game on the back of going out of Europe on Thursday, so it is a difficult turnaround. We've been through that this year already, and it can be very difficult to try and, you know, back that up on with such a quick turnaround. So, you know, we felt that we'd have the edge in terms of freshness for sure. There's no doubt about that. I'm stating the obvious, but you've got to give credit to Rovers because they never gave in, and they came back at us, and they obviously equalised. But, you know, for us to get the winner late in the game in the manner that we did, I think I think we deserve to win, and it's great that we're into the next round of the cup.
Just another word on the match overall, Keith, because in terms of this pairing, this fixture, it always delivers something, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a derby. There's two proud clubs with big history, big tradition. You know, both sets of players fully committed, so that's what you expect. And we're just delighted that we go through to the next round of the cup.
You are into the last eight. Bulls haven't been in the cup final since 2008, the last time you won it. You've had some great nights recently in the Aviva. It'd be great to get back there. I know there's still quite some distance to go before you can do that.
Yeah, lots to do, so we can only look after today. We're into the next round of the hat, and let's see what the draw brings.
Players must be very jubilant in the dressing room though after that performance.
Yeah,
second half.
Yeah, they've enjoyed it, so it was great for the supporters. They backed the team from the time they come in to the stand today, so they're a partisan, loyal crowd that you know, I think the team have, they can identify and relate to the team. They can, you know, they can see the effort that the boys put in, but also as well the quality that we have. You know, we have, you know, in the Aviva, in some of the games that we played, we played some good stuff. We're an exciting team to watch, and we're glad that we've sent the supporters home happy today.
That's Keith Long. We mentioned there, Pat, 2008, you were the manager back then when Bulls last won the cup. They're just a couple of matches away from being back at the Aviva Stadium. They haven't played in a final in the new look Aviva, the old Lansdowne Road, in quite some time. That final back in 2008, of course, was at the RDS as well. I'm sure we'll be doing some reminiscing if Bulls get to the cup final about 2008. But it's a terrific win for Keith Long. Obviously, that's such a great rivalry, that the Bulls Shamrock Rovers. And I mentioned it before, it always delivers some drama, doesn't it?
No, absolutely. It's what Keith says there is true. You know, both sets of players know what's at stake for the supporters of each club, and that rivalry has grown and grown and grown, and it's a proper Dublin derby, which is good, and it's a fantastic win for Bowes. You know, it probably was a good week to catch Rovers. Obviously, going out of Europe on tours, you're losing a few players to injury, and obviously Scales gone as well. So, but you still got to go and perform, and they've done that on the pitch. And you know, they've a slow start to the season, Bowes, but they're playing really, really well at the moment. And I think if you're Keith Long, he's probably looking, they've got a lot of praise, and rightly so, for what they've done and the squads they built and have to rebuild. I think deep down he'll be thinking, but we need a trophy. You know, I think, and listen, there's difficult for Bowes to catch Rovers in the league, but I'm sure they'll keep going and trying. But, you know, we're taking a Rovers scalp. It takes the favourites out of the competition. And they'll be thinking, you know, to build on what we've built. You know, Bowes have done brilliant work on and off the pitch. Probably what's missing now for that period of time is, can they win one of the two big trophies? And they're in a really good position at the moment. You know, they'll be looking at the draw thinking, well, they're playing so well at the moment, you're better off getting one of the bigger teams now, you know, or playing one of them in the final, if you can get that far. So they're going to take a bit of beating, Bowes, you know, so it sets up the next round for some tasty draws, hopefully, that come out of there. But yeah, I think they will look at it and think, we're getting a lot of plaudits, but to win a trophy in the current time and the current climate for them would be a fantastic achievement.
And James, as Pat mentioned there, a bad few days for Shamrock Rovers, going out of Europe, beaten by Flora Tala over two legs, now out of the cup. They, you know, we would expect they'll push on and win the league. You know, you just get that sense, but it's been a rough old week for them.
Yeah, it's been a tough old week. When we spoke about that Flora Tallinn game initially, when the draw was made, we thought, you know, the Champions route might be good for Rovers, but Pat was there on Thursday night, so was myself, and they just didn't perform to a level that scared Flora at all, and it was a disappointing game for them, disappointing game for the club. And then to go to the next, like the Sunday, to a derby against Bohemians in Dalymount, and lose that as well. So I'd say a couple of heads are down, but as Pat said, there's a couple of players missing from that team, a couple of injuries and what have you, and obviously Scales signing went through then on Friday morning to Celtic, so they're missing players. But yes, they should push on with the league. That's them out of the cup. The main people now to look at the cup, if I was a Bohemians fan, would be Dundalk, because this might be their only chance of European football this year. So Dundalk would be looking at really, really putting a cup run together and hopefully winning the cup to get into Europe.
Pat, just a word on Liam Scales. How do you think he'll do over at Celtic?
Listen, it's a massive step, you know. It's a great move for him, absolutely brilliant move for him. I think, you know, even though Celtic lost yesterday, I think they're on the up under the new manager. They're playing really exciting brand of football. I think over the last couple of years it's been a bit laboured, but watching them at the moment is really exciting. Listen, it's going to be a big ask to get into that team, you know. But what Celtic are doing on a regular basis, and you see them picking players from around Europe that are young, talented, and can they develop? And I'm sure the hope for him is that, for us, it's a really decent price that they paid for him. For a club like Celtic, it's a good investment, because if he does really well, then they'd be looking to move him on, you know. But the first step for him is to get settled and get into the team. I think one of the keys for him is that he's been playing regularly, he's fit, he's not coming in the pre-season where he hasn't played and he has to catch up. He's in a good position at the moment. Celtic have signed another right back, they've got plenty of competition now, so it's a great move for him. But the work starts now, because he's got to break into that team and get a level of consistency in his performances that keep him in the team, you know, and that won't be easy.
Yeah, and James, your team, Derry City, I mentioned Mocht as being your local team, but of course on the podcast you're our designated Derry City supporter. That's where you're one of your true loves. Beaten by Ollie Horgan's boys.
Beaten, first time ever to be beaten in the FAI Cup by them, but it was a typical Northwest derby, to tell you the truth. And if both teams aren't at it from the very get-go, as Rory mentioned, it was a little bit laboured, it wasn't as good as we've seen in the last month, but fair play to Finn Harps, they've got to go and get the chances. And Paul mentioned there before, they had one or two chances before they got the penalty, then another couple of chances after it. It's always a ding-dong battle there, and usually only the one goal wins it. This time it's come out in Finn Harps. I thought, to tell you the truth, Adrian, when you said your team, Derry City, I thought you were going to bring me back to that 08 final there for a second, and it's just nightmares. It's a final of nightmares, let's put it that way. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I think on that, Adrian, as well, I think anybody looking at the draw, they won't want to go to Ballybuffet. You know, whether that's Bowes, you know, St. Pat's, Dundalk, that's one draw they won't want to. You know, I think Finn Harps will be looking for a home draw, and, you know, it's one place that you don't want to go to for a big cup game, you know. So, onward and upwards for Harps.
And not too many people, Pat, will fancy going to the team that you were involved with a few years back, or relatively recently, Waterford, going very well
absolutely.
Lately.
On a great run of form, and they'll be, you know, they'll be confident as well. Again, if they get a home draw, you know, they'll be very confident, you know, because like you say, they're playing really well. The new manager's come in, he's done a fantastic job there. He has them playing as a real unit. They're scoring goals. You know, they look very, very strong at the moment. And like you say, they'll be hoping that the big clubs draw each other and they can sneak their way into a final, you know. So it's intriguing at the moment. There's some big clubs left in there as well, but there's some smaller clubs that will be looking to the draw and thinking, you know, if you're looking at minute, say, you know, do they want the big draw, or would they prefer to play another maybe first division team and see can they get into the next round? So it's the draw. I think there will be some tasty fixtures when the draw is made.
Okay. All right. Listen, Pat, we'll leave it there. Many thanks for joining us on the line. That's Pat Fallon. Pat, as I mentioned, on duty for RTÉ Sport over the course of the international window. Live on Game On Wednesday night alongside John Kenny for commentary on Portugal against the Republic of Ireland. We also, of course, have Azerbaijan on Saturday, Ireland against Azerbaijan, with John Kenny live from the Aviva Stadium. That'll be live on Saturday Sport. And again, we'll have coverage next Tuesday of next week, of the Ireland-Serbia game live from the Aviva Stadium. In the Women's National League over the course of the weekend, Cork City 1, Shelburne 3. Emily Whelan, Noelle Murray and Kira Grant with the goals for Shells. Galway 0, Bohemians 0. That's how it finished at Eamon DC Park. Wexford Youths 1, Piemont United 1. So honours even between two of the top three sides, and Athlone Town defeated Treaty United by 2-1. So Shells back to the top of the table. They've got a 2-point lead. They host actually Piemont in their next league game, so that's going to be a biggie. But of course, Piemont also have a game in hand on Shells. So again, it's very finely balanced at the top of the Women's National League. It's going to be a fascinating conclusion. Now then, let's move on. I'm delighted to say we're joined by an old friend of the podcast, and indeed you'll recall Ruth Fahey from her days on M&S / Soccer Republic. And Ruth has been appointed CEO of the Galway Women's Football Team. Great move, first woman CEO in this country of a footballing side. How are you doing, Ruth?
I'm good, thanks you guys. Hi, Adrian, and hi, James.
Good, good. You're taking up the role this week. How did it come about? Is it something that you'd always been interested in, the sort of administrative side of football?
Yeah, to be honest, it's something that I always foresaw myself kind of going into after I finished playing. Not sure if I saw it coming probably this early. I just didn't think the structures in Ireland would be ready for it. But I got the call from the board of our club in June a couple of months ago. And yeah, just straight away, I don't think I've ever been offered a job like that and felt such a wave of excitement. Obviously, quite an amount of wariness and a little bit of trepidation as well, because ultimately you are going into a role where there's an awful lot of uncertainty, so that can be a bit scary, but I think that's just the reality of women's football. If you want to take to that next level, it's a whole blank template to work with, so that can be both a little bit nerve-wracking, but also it could be great, so we're going to do our very best to make sure that we give it our best effort.
Yeah, it's a very broad question, Ruth, but you know, what do you hope to achieve, or what can be achieved? I mean, are you very optimistic? Are you buzzing about the women's game in this country, or where do you see it's at the moment? Is there a lot of work still to be done to really push it on?
There is definitely a lot of work to be done. Like I said, it's a huge open landscape. Where is the game at the moment? It's come on massively. I mean, we're looking at literally the 10-year mark, so it was established in 2011. I played the first couple of years, I was out for a couple of years, and then came back in, so I'm fortunate that I had that time away, and then I got to come back literally right in the thick of it as a player, so I got to assess the development very honestly. I do honestly think it's better in a lot of ways. I think coming back in this year, there's been a huge push from the media side. Like, we've got LOI TV, we've got a streaming service where every game is shown free to air, and even for me as a player and for us as a team, that's been amazing, not to mind the supporter base. The sponsor, we've got the same sponsor as the men's side, SSC Electricity, which has been superb. Evoke has been named recently as the FAI Cup final sponsor. I feel like momentum is gathering, things are happening. You know, there's rumours of hopefully bringing that coverage to another level next season as well. So I feel like it is a really good time, really exciting time to be involved, but of course, a lot of pitfalls, a lot of challenges. Obviously, the commercial side, both on a domestic level and then in the clubs as well, isn't something that has been explored really fully, because every club is so busy trying to kind of survive, I suppose, trying to get from the start to the end of the season. And there's a lot of difficulties that come with that. So that's the reason why the board has kind of decided that the best way forward is really just to employ someone full time, because the fact is, when you have someone there who's got their entire day focused on this job, so it's just about energy and putting energy in the right places. And I'm not going to be able to do it on my own. I'm going to need a lot of help around me and a whole lot of team, and it's where I have to lean into my network. But since I'm lucky in the routes I've gone in my career so far, I've had good stints in different areas in football, but also in kind of business and law as well. So I've made great connections, great people, and I've had a lot of support in the last few days, people reaching out and offering their help, which has been lovely, because, as I said, a bit of trepidation over the next few months, but I do feel supported and people around me, so ready to go.
Ruth, it seems to have happened over the last year and a half, maybe, in Galway, that the men's side of the club has gone very, very professional, and it just seems to be a natural progression for the women's side of the club to now go as professional as they can possibly be. So it's a great foresight by the board, as you're mentioning.
Yeah, it's huge, to be honest. I was surprised initially. I didn't think they'd be there yet, just because it's quite a big step. You know, it's the first club to really do it. So to have the vision and foresight is really impressive. I think what happened was, we're looking at a club, we're fast approaching the 10-year mark ourselves. You know, our first season was 2013, so we're coming up to 10 years where, on reflection, we haven't really pushed on to where we want to go. And I think, obviously, the strongest indicator of that is that we haven't won anything. Like, we haven't won anything. We haven't achieved silverware. We've produced a couple of players, but really they came from below, you know, before Galway WFC's time. So the board, to their credit, I think, especially with COVID, just took the time. You know, with the season last year, there was space and time to think. So they stepped back, thought, what do we need? And I think what they needed, like I said before, was just someone to come in with energy and time, because ultimately, if we do want to go that route in the future, and this will be in the future, of things like semi-professional football and, you know, trying to give our players everything that they deserve, you have to have the foundations in place. You have to have a really solid, rigid club structure in place. So I have to commend the board for doing that. They could have gone another way to do it, but I think the way they're going now is the right way. So I really hope I can do their foresight justice and give it my best.
Yeah. And ultimately, as you mentioned, I mean, it's probably, as you said, it's a broad canvas, but the target has to be to try and bridge the gap between the likes of, you know, the Piemans and Shelburnes and Wexford, who've really carried the flag superbly for regional football in the women's game in recent years. But that has to be the goal. We had a team, of course, up to a couple of years back in Castlebar in the west of Ireland, but Galway now, outside of Treaty, of course, in Limerick, carrying the flag for the west coast of Ireland. So I guess that has to be the goal, to try and close the gap that exists.
Yeah, exactly. And I was asked, that's the question I'm kind of asked most frequently, what does success look like? And obviously success will come in loads of different ways, but strategic objective number one, how can we win this league and qualify for Europe? So we just have to set that as a target and work backwards from there. And as you say, Adrian, you know, the Piemont, Shelburne and Wexford have been doing incredible things for the league. Just behind them then is Dialora, who I think have actually stepped up massively. And it's funny how you can get a feel from a club that things are being done right. You know, you get a feel from just the way they conduct themselves. You get a feel from the way they are as a team that something is changing there. And I'm really impressed by that and inspired by that. But those three at the top are doing great things. And I do cite Wexford as a special one because they are outside the capital and they've managed to make things work in their own way. They've done things a little bit differently, and I obviously played with them a couple of years ago, so they do hold a little bit of a special place in my heart. But when the biggest thing I took away from there is how they conduct themselves all around the matches, all around training. And thankfully now I'm in a position where I can bring that experience back to my club. But yes, we need to close that gap. We're currently in fifth place, and it's that gap is very clear. It's very, very clear between the top three and the rest. As I said, they are pushing. We can't hold our hands up and say that we are pushing yet. So that's why change is needed. I think I know what needs to be done. It's just about going how to prioritise what's most important first, because the great thing is I'm in here now. You know, I'm here and I'm actually haven't started yet. I'm starting on Wednesday. Feels like I've already gotten going. I have September. I have 3 or 4 months before we set into our new calendar year. It's not an awful lot of time, and we're obviously not going to achieve all that we want to achieve, but it does give time to put really good plans in place. So at the moment, I'm just sort of talking to all the right people, defining exactly where we want to go, and then after that, it's picking, okay, what's most important? What can we do here? Some things are going to have to wait. You know, there's so many lovely, exciting, creative things that we can do, and that's just going to have to wait for the moment while we get all the foundations in place. But ultimately, I don't see those top three as uncatchable. You know, I've seen games over the last couple of weeks. We've played Piemont, Shelburne, Wexford. There's been a one-goal gap in between. And we've just been kind of missing that clinical edge as footballers. I think our conditioning can always be better as well. Those type of things we're going to obviously improve when we have, again, I keep saying the word foundations, but when we have them in place, I hope all those things will spring from that. And I don't feel the gap is in any way unachievable. I mean, I actually feel it's so achievable, and that gives me confidence as well.
Very best of luck with it, Ruth, as you take up that appointment during the course of this week. And
thank you so much, guys.
Every good wish. No problem. There you go, that's Ruth Fahy joining us on the line. James, just before we wrap things up, we should reference, of course, as well, the under-21s. They start their European Championship qualifying campaign. They've got Bosnia and Herzegovina on Friday, and like the senior team, they're in action as well on Tuesday of next week against Luxembourg. So best of luck in that campaign for Jim Crawford and the team, eh?
Yeah, best of luck. I know Jim is picking his squad, and there's obviously several players he'd like in the squad who are actually brought into the senior squad, which just seems to happen over the last couple of years. But yeah, I think Jim just needs to get a good result as well. There was good results prior to Jim coming in, but he's a quality manager, and I'm sure he'll point them definitely in the right direction. Hopefully they get a good start to the qualifying campaign.
Okay, in terms of fixtures this coming weekend, domestically in the Premier Division, Pats against Longford Town at Richmond Park. The Bowes Derry City game at Dalyma Park is off due to international call-ups. Bowes, of course, with three players in that under-21 squad that Jim Crawford has. Waterford against Dundalk. That's a juicy tie at the RSC on Friday night. Drogheda against Sligo Rovers at Head of the Game Park at 7:45 Friday. And Finn Harps taking on the league leaders Shamrock Rovers, Finn Park, 8 o'clock in the First Division. Cabinteely against Galway United at Stradbroke on Friday. Cork City against Athlone Town. Treaty United against Cove Rounders. UCD against Bray Wanderers. And Shelburne taking on Wexford. Look at that's all we have time for on the podcast this week. We'll be back again next week. Until then, from myself and James, bye for now.